Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because we're talking awards season, prestige movies, with the most award-worthy, prestigious man I know, Mr. Rob DiCristino. Hi, Rob.
I'm here, Patrick, for your consideration.
Thank you so much. I'm a little bit shot out of a cannon because we haven't had a show in a few weeks. I was very, very sick. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling better now. We're ready to talk prestige movies.
First show back, everybody, and we have no plan.
That's right. So we're just winging it.
Roll with it. Patrick, speaking of no plan, let me ask you a question.
What up?
All right. Who do you think should sing the No Time to Die theme? Because that's the big question everybody's asking right now. Who should sing the No Time to Die theme song for Bond 25?
I don't know enough contemporary musicians, to be honest.
Fuck, me neither.
I would hear names thrown around, and I would be like, oh, sure, yeah, I don't know who that person is, you know?
I was sitting earlier today and like riffing ideas for like melodies and was just making stuff up with like previously recorded songs like No Time to Die.
Yes.
Don't want to take no time to. You
know, I liked that trailer a lot. I got really excited for that movie.
Yeah, I'm a Bond fan. We've talked a little bit about it. I'm always rooting for Bond. And what's the Knives Out actress's name, who just I texted you an ad the other night, like she just invaded our lives all of a sudden and now she won't let go.
It's Ana de Armas.
Ana de Armas, yeah. I mean, she's great in Knives Out, and I guess I didn't realize that she was in the Bond, and then they released the trailer and the character posters, and then she got the Golden Globe nomination, and I was like, oh shit, all right, well, she's here now.
She's been in my life since Knock Knock.
Okay, that's right. I did look that up because I've seen Knock Knock, but I did not remember her from that. But maybe she should sing it.
I'm down.
Maybe Keanu Reeves should sing it.
I would fully support that. Dog Star.
Yes.
His band, No Time to Die, performed by Dog Star.
There you go.
He get my vote. The other day, Erica and I were watching Judy, the Judy Garland biopic. And at one point on the screener, you know, every once in a while they put "for your consideration" as text on the screen. And I thought, I'll bet when you go see this movie at the theater, the same thing happens. You just, the whole movie, it just says "for your consideration" at the top of the screen throughout all of Judy.
Yep.
But please, you did bring
that
up
movie says, please look at me. That's what the movie says. Please look at me.
Does it ever. You did bring up the Golden Globe nominations, so why don't we start by talking about those, because I guess those sort of semi-officially kick off awards season. We've had a few critics groups already announce their winners, because everyone is in a race to be first.
Can we talk about that for a minute?
I mean,
since we're just talking about whatever, and I've already thrown you off on two tangents, can we talk for a second? I texted you last night, I was like, how are these critics groups voting yet?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it's all of them. I'm new to this, but boy, that I was frustrated. I was like, there's still stuff that comes out. Like, I don't know.
Well, so we are both members of critics organizations, and I've had to vote for both of mine already. Now just the nominations, not the official. I'm not choosing winners yet, but I do choose winners for the Chicago Film Critics as of this week. And then those will be announced on Saturday. I don't know when Online Film Critics chooses their winners, but, you know, it's hard. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, there's a schedule. I know they emailed.
I just can't be bothered to learn it. it's hard because, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into this as we talk about some of the movies we've been watching lately, but you have to cram everything in like 2 weeks because so many of these movies aren't released. It's not like, oh, I've slacked off all year and now I need to cram everything I missed this year. Because there's a little bit of that in our run-up to when we do our 10 Best show. Like, I will be like, I have to go Redbox Stuber before we do the 10 Best list because
you never know.
I missed out on Stuber. I don't know what's happening right now.
47 meters down, Unleashed, or what was that called? Uncaged?
Uncaged, yeah. Right. I'm sorry, I had IMDb up, and all of a sudden it started playing music.
Was it No Time to Die theme song?
I wish it by Dog Star. So I do a little bit of cramming then, and it's not like I do it to vote. I certainly do to vote because so many of these movies are only coming out in November and December. So it's like you have to see everything. Nothing gets a chance to like hang out in your brain.
Yeah.
You just have to make these sort of snap decisions based on the 20 movies you've watched in the last 2 weeks. I'm not complaining, everyone. This is going to sound like complaining, kind of first world problem nonsense. And I swear I'm not. I just don't know why things are done the way they're done sometimes.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat where it's you're sitting there waiting. We were talking off mic about one of the studios sending an email out like, hey, you know, did you get your screeners yet? Because, you know, we'll send them to you if you haven't. And I didn't get them yet. And I emailed like, hey, you know, no, I have not got them yet. Please send them as soon as possible. And they were like, well, what date do you need them by? Because we can send you this and that. And when are you voting? And like, they were like in a panic because it was like,
right.
If all these groups, like I'm the Philly Film Critics, they voted already. You know, I'm not officially with them yet, but like they voted already. And I'm like, I'm just flabbergasted by that. I don't know how they get everything out so fast and how they have time to cram all that stuff in. And it's like you said, like, you know, this time of year is where the screeners are coming in the mail and stuff. And I'll go to my mailbox and I'll find something and be like, oh, I saw that already. And I'll kind of be disappointed. And I'll be like, well, no, watch it again. Like, this is a perfect opportunity. Right. Like Booksmart. Like, I haven't seen Booksmart since it was on Redbox, but I'm like, I'll watch Booksmart again. Like, this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to let a movie breathe and then approach it again, which we don't have time to do when everything comes out in December. And it's like, quick vote, you know, which of course is on purpose because, you know, they want it in your mind and it's calculated, but it's frustrating.
I kind of wish, and again, we're very fortunate that, you know, they send us screeners. So again, I'm not complaining about the screener process, but I just kind of wish we had a few weeks to absorb these movies and then everyone votes like the last week of the year or something, you know, like everything comes out the last week of the year. But I know that can't happen because everybody's got to be first. You got to be first out of the gate to name something best picture, and you got to be first out of the gate to name someone best actor. Because
that drives the momentum for the next awards.
Exactly. It kicks off the narrative for awards season. So, and that's why I checked out of awards season a long time ago. I'm always interested to read people's 10 best lists, and I'm curious to see what different critics' bodies vote as their favorites of the year. But in terms of like Golden Globes and Oscars and sort of those more high profile awards, I have completely checked out because so much of it is just driven by the narrative as opposed to the actual merits. You know, I don't believe that art is a contest to begin with, but rather than anybody actually deciding sort of what the best performances are, or what their favorite performances are, it's entirely driven by this award season narrative.
And it's a self-perpetuating problem because so many people want to jump in and be a part of it because of that narrative. And they want to be, you know, think about Twitter. It's like you want to be first to define the narrative. So even if you know it's toxic, you're jumping in headlong into it anyway. And then it just perpetuates itself forever. Like it's really frustrating. And you know, somebody joked the other day about like film Twitter and film nerds and stuff like this is our playoff season, and this is how like sports fans get about, you know, their narratives and so on. And I guess it is kind of similar, you know, in a similar way where there are these competitions and these, you know, homerisms and all that, and there's people who have defined, you know, the narrative, and people have canceled certain actors and canceled certain directors, and if you don't vote for this movie you're stupid and how dare you think this and that, and everything is binary, everything is black and white, you know. It's like it's the high school cafeteria, you know, you're just, there's people on the outskirts trying to sort of define their voices. And then there's this very, very hardcore, like, this is how things are kind of center. And, you know, I wrote last week about a little bit of cultural gatekeeping when it came to The Irishman, you know, how you're watching The Irishman. And it's like there are bigger problems.
I like the nomination process. It's daunting because you get these spreadsheets of here's every movie that came out, here's every performance, you know, here's every lead performance in a movie this year, here's everyone who directed a movie this year, and you have to pick five of them, you know. And it's daunting, but I like being able to choose some things that are maybe a little bit outside the lines, at least for the nomination process. Now, rarely do those make it to the actual categories because not enough people are thinking like me. You know, not enough people are writing in Wesley Snipes for Dolomite as best supporting actor. Right. But I like having the opportunity to recognize some performances or some titles that maybe aren't going to be recognized, but I'm exercising my tiny little bit of power to do what I can for a movie.
Yeah, you have to. I remember last year I looked at like my best picture votes, and then I looked at the list that my critics group kind of selected, and like none of mine were anywhere close, like and it was not even aligned even slightly. And I was just like, all right, well, you know what? I did my little part. I did my little, you know, I made my little voice heard, you know, right. Which is all you can do, like you said. All right, so should we talk Golden Globes?
Yeah, let's.
I want to talk Golden Globes. For a long time, the conventional narrative in my head was always that the Golden Globes versus the Oscars, you know, the Golden Globes were to me the ones that you were supposed to pay attention to because the Oscars are Hollywood prom and, you know, at least the Golden Globes are voted on by writers. In the last like 2 or 3 years, I've just abandoned that. Like I am fascinated by some of the things that the Hollywood Foreign Press Association has picked. I don't know how you feel about the Golden Globes at all. I mean, I know you mentioned kind of not really ignoring it in general, but if you had to pay attention to one, would it be the Oscars or the Golden Globes?
It would be the Oscars. To me, okay. The Golden Globes are a farce.
Okay, so I have it backwards. That sounds right.
Right around the time they nominated Johnny Depp for The Tourist, I was like, oh, okay, they don't intend to be taken seriously at all.
Do you think that's an issue of access? I mean, because
star fucking, yes.
Well, yeah, because, you know, obviously the narrative, for those of you who aren't part of critics groups, yes, we all are paid to like Marvel movies. I get a big check.
I get paid to not like DC movies. I don't know.
Yeah, right. That's right. See, that was your deal. Yeah. My deal was a little different. I have to wait till next year till I get Wonder Woman 84. You know, when that comes out, then I'll get on that list because it was grandfathered in. It was a whole thing. But anyway.
I like that trailer, by the way.
Yeah, it was a fun trailer.
Yeah.
we have to talk about the Ghostbuster trailer, but anyway,
do we?
Do we though? I'm wondering, is it a access thing? Because I notice certain writers, obviously there is, it's kind of like, you know, the press and the government kind of where it's like, there's that thing of, well, if you say something bad, you know, you might not get access next time. Or if you do this, or I'm wondering who is paying who, not in dollars, but in favor, you know, and I don't like to think about it that deeply, but the more I get acclimated with this world, the more I'm kind of like, oh, I see why that person is saying that, or oh, I see why this studio is doing this thing or that thing, or I see the effort that like certain studios put into the For Your Consideration packages now. Like I see kind of the extent to which they're willing to promote certain things. And I'm just wondering, again, we go back to that self-fulfilling kind of circle of right. Just misery and corruption and stuff like that. And I'm just wondering, right. Do you enjoy this process? Like, do you enjoy being, you know, part of critics groups and stuff? Like,
yeah, I mean, yes, because, I like taking part in the vote. You know, I wish things were done differently in a lot of ways. Obviously the access to screeners is great. And like I said, I try to recognize some things that maybe aren't going to be recognized everywhere. So I definitely like it. And again, you know, my whole reason for following these kinds of things, like when critics put out their top 10 lists or when bodies, you know, put out their awards, my whole reason for following that isn't like because I'm engaged in the contest of it all. It has everything to do with wanting to be turned on to something that I might not have been turned on to otherwise. You know, if somebody puts a movie that I was not on my radar as their number one or two, like, of course I'm going to do everything I can to see that movie as soon as possible. So I like that aspect of it. And that's the reason that I always enjoy, you know, I love doing our top 10 show, not because I think again, art is a contest, or you need to rank everything in terms of how much you liked it, but just because I like listing some movies that maybe I can turn some people on to. And I like, you know, that Adam and JB and you and Mark on and Erica and everybody is going to throw out some titles that maybe people wouldn't have given a chance to.
And it really tells you who you are. Like, it shows who you are.
Right.
I always have that thing. It's that high fidelity principle of, you know, it's what you like, not what you are like. And the two are kind of combined, which is like, you know, you are very much defined. Like, you know, when I'm writing my top 10, I'm looking, you know, I kind of have a draft of it right now and I'm looking at it and I'm going like, I don't know if this is right, but this is who I am and this is how I feel. And that's how it's going to be. You know, you let go of that need to be like, well, I'm going to be at the head of the contest, or I'm going to be a tastemaker, or I'm going to see this before it happens. But it's like you said, like, I love listening to the episode, you know, the top 10, because it's like, you just love to see where everybody comes down on stuff and what hit people and what didn't. And Adam, as of recording right now, Adam posted his business awards.
Yes.
Which even, you know, Adam, you know, hated some movies that I enjoyed, but I still love reading his list, because it tells me who Adam is as a person. And, you know, I love Adam very much and I enjoy seeing his perspective. So it is about that, like, you know, that personal definition. And that's when it's done right. I think when people try to posture and people try to do certain things for reasons that are a little disingenuous, I think it's very easy to see that, and also it takes the fun out of it, you know.
Well, that's one of the reasons Erica and I have been redoing a lot of our lists from the early 2000s, because I think there were elements of me doing that, and again, it wasn't for anybody, I wasn't publishing my list anywhere, it was like only for myself. But I know that I was putting on movies that I thought should be on my list because I got caught up in end of the year nonsense. And so I look at, like, we're working on 2003 right now, and I look at my 2003 list and I want to die sometimes with what I decided to include on there. And I'd much rather have a list that represents, you know, who I actually am as opposed to who I think I want to be. And it's weird, because some years our top 10 list, my top 10 list specifically, is very much me. And then this year, I feel like my top 10 list is going to look like every other top 10 list.
I always have that thing where I'm thinking about it and I'm going, "This, well, it's obvious. This is the same as everybody else's."
Right.
And then I look at everybody else's and I go, "Oh, well, no, I guess it isn't." You know? So I wouldn't, you know, don't be too hard on yourself yet, because you might, you know, you might see some, you know, differences. And I also have that thing where, like, I will sit there on the Letterboxd app and make these lists and go, like, all right, well, I know this one will probably be on the list as soon as I see it, so I put that in a spot and I go, well, hold on, wait, I haven't even seen it yet. Like, do I know this is going to be on my list? Well, no, but I put it there because I'm assuming that, you know, between number three and number four, there might be a gap, and maybe I'll make that number three. And then, okay, when I see this, that'll probably be number six. And then I can move this down, and then that'll get kicked off the list. And I'm like, what am I doing? Like, this is crazy. Anyway.
Back to the Golden Globes. Yeah, right. So the only thing that I like about the Golden Globes is because of their expanded categories. I mean, they do a category for musical and comedy, which is almost always a joke. They'll nominate any movie that was a musical, and then they'll have a bunch of movies that weren't really comedies. But they do get to nominate more stuff, and you do get a few surprise, interesting nominations. You know, to jump right into it, for best actress in a comedy, they nominated Beanie Feldstein for Booksmart. And I thought that was really cool. I thought that was really interesting. I mean, that whole category is kind of weird. I didn't see Where'd You Go, Bernadette. I know you did, because you reviewed it. Cate Blanchett is obviously always good. And I liked Ana de Armas in Knives Out, but I don't know that I'm handing her an award.
Right.
But I thought the nomination of Beanie Feldstein was cool, you know, if nothing else.
So let's jump in or
yeah, sure.
Okay, so let's start with that then. Best actress, it's Awkwafina for The Farewell, Ana de Armas for Knives Out, Cate Blanchett for Where'd You Go, Bernadette, Beanie Feldstein Booksmart, Emma Thompson Late Night. Now, this isn't going to turn into like, what's your vote, but like, what do you think of, do you feel like there's anything that was really left out, or, you know, what's your snub, Patrick?
What are you going to tweet about?
Okay.
I'm going to stay off Twitter the way that I mostly have.
You absolutely should.
And, no, I don't necessarily feel like anything was snubbed. I think it's interesting that they nominated Beanie Feldstein, but not Caitlin Dever for Booksmart, you know, as though only one of them was worthy of an award. But yeah, no, I can't even pick a winner out of the group. I can't even say like, oh, that person clearly deserves it. But yeah, I, why is there somebody you feel like should have been?
No, not necessarily. I mean, cause I don't care, but I just I'm trying to get a sense of like the demographic they look at, trying to look at, you know, do how often does a movie, you know, like late night didn't really get, you know, any traction. And, you know, I saw that movie. I didn't mind it. I don't really necessarily think it deserves that much traction, but like Emma Thompson's a known entity, you know, she's a prestige actress. So we're going to nominate Emma Thompson,
right,
you know, and it's,
right,
it's kind of like, well, all right, you know, and maybe it's her turn or whatever. And like Awkwafina in The Farewell, like, sure. Like the narrative is that Awkwafina is this, you know, comedian and stuff, but she, I mean, I like The Farewell a lot. She's really good in it. And I'm like, you know, what is the intention? See, that's the problem. I get that cynical brain where I'm like, all right, well, what is the intention behind this? What is the intention behind this nomination? What narrative is it, like you said, what narrative is it trying to drive? We can look at, you know, Best Actor, Daniel Craig in Knives Out, DiCaprio, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Taron Egerton in Rocket Man, which I know a lot of people were kind of afraid that Edgerton wouldn't get any recognition,
yeah,
which it's nice to see him on there because I enjoyed Rocket Man. I think he's really good in it. Eddie Murphy in Dolomite, and then Roman Griffin Davis in Jojo Rabbit. Again, I don't want to drive this into a like a what is your choice thing, but in discussing the Golden Globes, what would you want the parameters of the discussion to be?
Well, you know, the problem here is DiCaprio gave my second favorite performance of the year. So he would be my favorite. Having said that, the movie's not really a musical or a comedy. So I don't know what it's doing in this category. It's nominated for, right, Best Picture, musical or comedy. And it's neither.
Right.
So, again, the whole thing is kind of a farce. But in that, and I think that's a really strong category because I thought Eddie Murphy was terrific. I love Daniel Craig in Knives Out. Everybody here is good. You know, DiCaprio, yeah, just happens to have given like my second favorite performance. My first, spoilers, is Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He gives my favorite performance of the year.
Well deserved. Yeah. So I kind of see that as like, kind of like you said, it's interesting. Yeah. Cause they don't really know where to put Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It just kind of goes there. And because that's the other, that's the also ran, right, not a, right, drama.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. Do you want to look at the movies themselves? Maybe we'll look at the, like the Best Picture nominations themselves and just generally kind of talk,
sure,
a little bit about those.
Yeah. We can, do that.
So
I think, sorry, it's interesting that three of the five dramas are Netflix movies.
See, that's the big thing. So, Best Motion Picture Drama, Irishman, Marriage Story, Joker, 1917, and The Two Popes.
I have not seen The Two Popes.
I've not seen The Two Popes or 1917.
I saw 1917. I haven't seen, okay, the other. I haven't seen The Two Popes, but I have seen four of those five.
Okay. What do you think?
I mean, for me, it's The Irishman because that's one of my favorite movies of the year. I can't say for sure that it would win. I have no idea what will win.
Right.
Because, again, the narrative hasn't started yet, so we don't know what's gaining traction.
Right.
but I like The Irishman the best out of that category.
Musical and comedy, it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Jojo Rabbit, Knives Out, Rocket Man, Dolomite is my name. That one, it really is funny to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood listed as a comedy. I guess I don't know where I would put it either. I don't know. I guess that's the thing with Tarantino, though. What are your we were talking about this show. I was worried that it would, I don't want it to dip over into your best of,
yeah,
your top 10.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Jojo Rabbit? Because I seem to be the only person who liked it.
JB is a fan and I believe Jan is a fan. I will let them, okay, speak for themselves, but I thought it was okay. I thought, I think I was, based on some of the post Fantastic Fest hype, I think I was expecting something that I liked more.
Okay.
Not, I won't say something better, but something that I liked more. And based on Taika Waititi's other movies, I've responded to, I think, more than this. I thought it does some really interesting things. I think its heart is basically in the right place. You know, I think the people complaining about the use of Hitler are misguided. They have every right to, you know, feel the way that they do, but I'm pretty sure I understand what Taika Waititi is going for. But I guess I come down on thinking it was just okay.
Okay. Yeah, and I watched it twice, and I think the second time.
The first time it seemed like you thought it was just okay.
I know. I texted you guys, and I was like, "That's pretty good." Like, I don't know, but there was something in it that drove me to. You know what it was? Is because in the screener package they sent, they also sent the screenplay, and I was sitting there kind of flipping through it a little bit, and I was like, "You know what? I want to watch it again." And when I watched it again, I think it was kind of like The Irishman, where like I watched The Irishman the first time, and I was like, "All right, well, this is pretty great. Like this is a masterclass." And then the second time, I'm bawling my eyes out at the end of it. Like, okay, it hit me. I think Jojo Rabbit for me was kind of that way too, where I was like, okay, no, this is like good. Like this is doing more than I maybe gave it credit for. So I think that's going to be a little hill for me to die on this year. Cause I was looking up some of the discussion about it, and it seems to be very like, well, obviously that movie is terrible. And obviously that movie is misguided. And obviously that movie is really the wrong way to look at this. And I haven't really seen anybody really embrace it. And I just, not that anybody's wrong. Everybody's entitled to their opinion, but I was just surprised, you know, given Taika Waititi's kind of, you know, his prestige, not prestige, but his nerd prestige, you know, his,
right.
You know, he's got a little bit of a, you know, he's got a little bit of a nerd edge, a little bit of a Simon Pegg kind of quality to him where nerds kind of like gravitate toward him. And I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I think Scarlett Johansson is great in that movie. And you know, I love Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell is going to be one of my best supporting actor nominations for sure. I don't know. I guess if you liked Jojo Rabbit, let us know. Cause I'm looking, me and JB and Jan, I guess, are a little bit alone on this one. Because I didn't vote for Joker. How do you feel about Joker being in the drama?
You texted me something the other day about, an award being given for a movie that handles an issue or something. I can't remember the exact wording.
Yeah. Something that presents, it was like an award for a movie that introduces a narrative or says something important about a social issue or something. And I was like, they made up this award so they could give it to Joker, didn't they?
Which is astounding to me. Why do we need to give a person or film that drives major public discourse on a topic or issue? The winner is Joker. So what major issue was the discourse other than is Joker any good? That was the discourse, and you had half the people saying yes, it's great, and half the people saying no, it's trash. Like, I don't think it really raised questions or added to the discourse on mental health in America, even though it attempts to pretend that it's saying something about that subject.
It pretends to.
It sure does.
It isn't for real.
It pretends to do so many things. I mean, whatever. I'm not surprised. I'm a little surprised that the nominations go deeper, like Todd Phillips being nominated. You know, Joaquin Phoenix being nominated doesn't surprise me. That's the one thing. Like, I could even see him getting an Oscar nomination for Joker. Sure. I don't agree with it, but whatever. It's fine. But going as deep as to nominate Todd Phillips for Best Director for Joker, I think...
especially at the expense of some of the other,
yes,
you know, worthy choices, I think.
Yes.
So,
yeah, I'm not. I mean, I we've talked about it a little bit. I was not really a Joker fan. And maybe I'm just too old for that movie. I don't know, because I have students who were blown away by it, and they haven't seen Taxi Driver or The King of Comedy, so. I guess, you know, if this is how you're first being introduced to this kind of a movie, then maybe it is going to blow your mind the way Taxi Driver did for me when I saw it the first time. I would argue that Taxi Driver is a better movie than Joker, but
yes,
that's the, you know, listen, you know, whatever.
And everybody has an entry point, you know, to be fair, everybody has an entry point and, you know, and I, when I wrote that review, like I reviewed Joker for our site and I was kind of like, I was very nervous about how that would go over. Like I was kind of really like, I need to be honest about this, but I want to try to write this as if I've seen this movie multiple times and I've really digested it. I tried to digest it as much as I could, as fast as I could. Like I wrote the review the day after I saw the movie and I had ruminated on the movie and thought about it, but I was like, I feel like I've felt everything that I'm going to feel about this movie. And so I felt comfortable writing the review that I wrote, and I stand by the review that I wrote, but it was kind of one of those, like, I don't think this movie knows what it is. I don't think this movie, you know, is this Fight Club without the satire? Is this Taxi Driver? You know, definitely a young man's movie, but is it a young man's movie either way? Like, you know, is it a Patrick Bateman character? Is it, you know, what is the overall sort of narrative about? And, you know, we sort of alluded to this. My big problem with Joker is the way it handles mental health, and it has this sort of class structure. And, you know, class structure is a function of, you know, mental health is a function of class structure. I understand those with, you know, less economic status will be more likely to suffer greater consequences due to mental health issues. But I thought that the movie used that as a crutch in a way that was really unfair and really misguided and really immature. And it blew everything productive it had to say out of consideration for me. I was kind of just like, well, this isn't the movie it thinks it is. So when we talk about, oh, a movie made a big impact, it's like, right, but how much of that impact was in, well, post Dark Knight Rises, we know the Joker to be Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises, we know the Joker to be a inflammatory social presence, and how are we going to respond to it this time? You know, what's the mainstream media going to do with this? And I feel like the majority, as you said, the majority of the narrative around Joker was, what did you think of Joker? It's like, well, all right.
I remember seeing Joker and feeling like, oh boy, it needs something to balance. It was a movie out of balance. You know, it was very one-sided in terms of its, the way it looked at everything and its tone. And it made more sense when I was actually watching the movie, but I was like, oh, this movie needs something to balance it out. What? Oh, that's Batman. Like, it needs Batman. That's the thing that balances the Joker out.
What are you talking about, Patrick? There was that great scene with Bruce Wayne. Don't you remember that great scene?
Oh, I remember.
Don't you remember when he went down the pole? Remember when little Bruce Wayne? I had the big, well, really? So I went to see, I took my friend Dan to the press screening of Joker because he's, you know, a huge comic book fan. And we got into a little bit of a tiff about that afterwards because he loved that moment. And I like laughed out loud in the theater when little Bruce Wayne goes down the fire pole. I was like, come on. Like, what are we doing here?
Well, that stuff, I mean, it does such a disservice to the movie that Joker is trying to be, you know, any of the stuff with Thomas Wayne. And
don't make me think about Adam West right now. Like, what are you doing?
The stuff with Batman's parents being killed, all that stuff where it's trying to tie it into the larger DC universe handicaps the movie even greater than the movie was already doing.
I mean, it's funny that you mentioned this movie needs Batman and I agree, but also it has a Batman problem.
Exactly.
It has a Wayne family problem.
Right. Yeah. All of this, you know, speaks to Joker being, I don't know. I found it a very frustrating movie.
Speaking of frustrating narratives,
yes.
Let's talk Marriage Story. What did you think?
I thought Marriage Story. Before you
say anything, is it in your top 10?
It is not in my top 10.
So I just want to make sure I don't want to spoil. Like I said, I'm very nervous about spoiling what's coming next. So, okay, go ahead.
I don't even know what's in my top 10. Like, I have a top 4 that I feel pretty good about and then nothing else. So,
yeah, I'm in the same boat.
My top 10 is going to be a disaster this year because it's going to be like, I don't know, what did I kind of like? The my favorite movies, the ones near the top of my list, and they're going to be at the top of everyone's list, I suspect, are movies that I really, really loved, and will call this a great year for movies just because these movies came out.
Right.
And then everything else is just like, I don't know. I guess I liked that.
I guess this belongs on my list because
number seven.
It feels like it's supposed to.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, I don't want to be disingenuous. Yeah, I could put Marriage Story on my list. It's well acted. It's important, right? And but it won't be on my list because it didn't necessarily resonate with me the way that it's supposed to. I thought the performances were very good. I thought some of the writing was good. I appreciate what Noah Baumbach is trying to do. He's a filmmaker who I feel more and more distance from with almost every subsequent movie.
Like, what do you think the reason for that is?
I don't know. His first movie was probably my favorite of his. And then each time he makes a movie, I get pushed a little further away. Yeah. Honestly, this is so stupid. Part of in my head the whole time I was watching Marriage Story, I was like, is this about you divorcing Jennifer Jason Leigh? Because I have no sympathy for you, you fucking monster.
I had that too.
Blew the greatest thing that ever happened to you, and I refuse to feel any sympathy for you.
No, I totally get it. I enjoyed Marriage Story. Marriage Story might be on my top 10 only because of just there's factors and there's a lot of things involved in it that I really kind of did resonate with me. But yeah, I agree. There
I almost
is sort
texted
of that,
you to tell you not to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. I am fascinated. Speaking of narrative, I'm fascinated by the, again, stay off Twitter. Everybody should stay off Twitter. Everybody should stay off of it. I go on there because I'm like, I feel this weird responsibility to be visible because I'm like trying to, you know, like, well, you know, this is what quote unquote writers, quote unquote critics do.
They engage
in the narrative and blah, blah, blah. And every time I feel sick to my stomach, I'm like, this is terrible.
Yep.
And one of the major things I saw when I, you know, hit the little button for Marriage Story is like, well, whose side did you take? It's like you're missing.
Well, that's missing the point of the movie.
That's missing the point of the movie entirely. Like you don't understand. Like, and that's so there is an element of like, I almost get a weird allergy to the movie because I just don't want to talk about it. Like, I think that's one of those movies that's just going to live in my head and I'm just going to let it affect me. And I'm never going to talk about it with anyone ever again. Like except for right now, obviously, but like, you know what I mean? Like sometimes movies sit with you and I know I'm pretty sure I know for a fact, there's a couple movies that you have, you know, that you just like, I just want to sit with this and I don't ever want it to.
Yeah.
I'm just going to let it sit with me and we're not going to talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
That's going to be it.
More and more that's becoming every movie where it's just like, if I like a movie, I'm just like, I'm not going to talk about this. I'm just going to enjoy this personally. And I'm not going to go on Twitter and I'm not going to read people's takes on it.
Yeah.
I will say to Marriage Story's credit, I don't think the movie really takes a side.
It absolutely does not.
I think it ends up being one person's story more than the other. I think somebody else becomes a supporting character.
I absolutely agree with that, but I don't necessarily. I think that I'm not jumping in. I think that it does that for a reason to highlight the flaws of the character who it eventually becomes about.
I wish it had been a little bit more even-handed in terms of giving them equal screen time.
I agree.
Because I think there's some really interesting stuff happening with the character who becomes a supporting player.
That we don't get to see. I will say it features the opening device that it uses, which I won't spoil for anybody. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah.
The opening, that matters, right? Art is, you know, is about aesthetics and it's about, you know, narrative choices and editing choices. And, I really liked the opening device that Marriage Story uses. And that really endeared me to the movie quite a bit because in itself is a thesis, you know,
right.
That in itself is kind of like, oh, okay, you know, like I see kind of what this movie is eventually going to be about. And then Adam and I were talking a little bit about the song choices at the end of the movie, and how he dug a little bit into a little bit of research on how those, the context, the differing context between the original Sondheim songs that are used, and the context in which our characters perform them, which I thought added a nice little little layer of text to the movie that I, you know, I will definitely revisit, you know, and when I'm looking at it, it'll definitely add to my appreciation of the movie.
See, I wonder if it's a movie that I'm ever going to see again, or if it's something where I feel like I kind of got everything that I'm going to get out of it. And I know that there are layers to it, but in the same way that, like, I don't revisit Before Midnight.
Right.
I don't know how often I'll revisit this, because I just don't like seeing... I'd much rather watch a movie about two characters falling in love than right. the end of a relationship. It's a very good movie about the end of a relationship, but it's just not a movie that I'm as into.
So that, to me, is one of the... See, this is an interesting point, because one of the movies that is on and off of my list is The Nightingale.
Oh, boy.
Which I joked, speaking of Twitter, I decided to watch it on a Friday night.
Popcorn.
Poured a drink, sat down, put my feet up, gonna watch
all
the
right.
Night.
Yeah, all right, Babadook Ian. Lady, what do you got for me?
Yeah, come on, Babadook Lady.
Give
let's
me
do
some
this.
Of that Babadook magic.
What's going on in Australia? You know, let's
what's
talk.
What's Babadookin'?
Half an hour later, I'm going like, this is not a Friday night movie. This is a horrible, torturous, miserable piece of reality, and I hate everything. It's a fantastic movie. I don't ever want to look at it or be near it ever again, because it is just so incredibly, incredibly brutal. If you haven't investigated or looked into The Nightingale yet, you know, please be careful. It's one of the rare movies I'd say read a little bit before you go into it. But then I say to myself, well, hold on. Like, it affected me.
Right.
It affected me in a significant way. It affected me in a way that, you know, other movies that I would put on my list, like, you know, I would have to stretch to say they affected me that way. So does it belong on my list then? Right. Should I put it out of respect for the creators and stuff like that? Like, do I say, like, well, this movie affected the shit out of me. Do I need to put it on my list? I don't ever want to look at it again.
Yeah.
But does that mean it doesn't deserve a spot on my list? You know, that's the kind of one of those questions that we go through this time of year, I think.
I have not to go back to this 2003 conversation, but it's on our brains because Erica and I have been rewatching some 2003 movies and talking about our lists. One of the movies on my list from 2003 is Gaspar Noé's Irreversible. And that's that exact situation, which is like, I don't think I can ever see that movie again. I can't deny its power. It belongs on my list. And even though I have not revisited it in the 16 years since it came out, as we're going to remake our 2003 lists, spoilers, my guess is it's still going to be on my list. I'm not going to rewatch it before I remake it, but it is still stuck with me to the point where, yeah, I think I'm going to give it a spot on my list. But it's always subjective, you know, like, because there are other movies that probably affected me, not quite as severely, but that were also very hard to watch that, for exactly the reasons you just said, I wouldn't put on my list, you know? So it's not like every time a movie hits me in that kind of visceral, disturbing way, am I like, well, then I got to put this on my list because I have the same reaction to The Nightingale and it will not be on my list. So it's completely subjective all the time.
And, you know, that's right. That's where we say favorite, not best, you know, favorite, right, not right. You know, what affected you. It, you know, your list is an extension of your personality. And you can say, like, speaking of Gaspar Noé, like I watched Climax the other night. I texted you.
That opening shot is amazing.
Yeah. I can't remember what I watched. I watched a screener. I think I watched like a really dull, I don't know. We have this like text thread where we just go back and forth about like weird shit we're watching. I think I watched like The Aeronauts or something. Like I watched something like really innocuous and stupid. And I mean, you know, sure, The Aeronauts, go ahead, Amazon, go ahead with your bad self. Yeah. You know, we joke that, speaking of Judy, we joke that what's that fucker's name,
Eddie Redmayne,
that Eddie Redmayne came out of his mother when he was born and the doctor handed him to his mom and said, for your consideration, you know, that's kind of like all he does.
Do you think his face as a baby was punchable? I don't want to say any baby has a punchable face because I feel like it sends the wrong message, but at
Miles
what
Taylor,
age
for sure.
does his face become punchable?
When does he get Army Hammer face?
Is you it know, puberty like when it kind right. of starts and you're like, wait a second.
Wait a second, I want to punch that face.
You're becoming a man and I can't stand you.
the Aeronauts is saved by Felicity Jones trying to smile. She's like, I'm in a movie about hot air balloons where I get to wear dresses and this is cool. Don't watch the Aeronauts. It's silly.
Way ahead of you.
Yeah. Way ahead. Just leave that screener on the desk. So I think after that I was like, I need something weird. I texted you guys like, I'm gonna watch Climax, and you were like, good luck. And you know, like you said, Climax is well made. It's well acted. It's the movie it wants to be. It's the movie it wants to be. It knows what it is. It's got a rhythm and it's got a, you know, but I don't. That won't be on my shelf. You know, like, no. I'm not going to be like, I can't wait to go out and buy Climax on Blu-ray. Like, I just, you know, but then again, it's like, well, is Gaspar Noé a great filmmaker? Yeah. Is this Climax a well-made movie? Yeah, it absolutely is. But it's not going to be on my list, right. You know? And right. So, like you said, the subjectivity, it really comes in.
Yeah.
The Aeronauts is not great, folks. Just like speaking of Amazon, I'm looking at the Amazon screeners. Just like The Report. Did you watch The Report?
I haven't. It's on my stack to watch, but I have not yet watched it.
Adam Driver, who, you know, I think as a culture we're enjoying Adam Driver. I don't know. What do you think? I first knew him as the girls guy, and then obviously, you know, Star Wars kind of shot him up a little bit.
I think he's terrific. I think he always comes at a role, a line delivery, in a way other than what you would expect. And that's what was so great with him on Girls. It was like they found this guy who just was this guy. And only now do I realize what a great performance it was, because I've seen him do so many other things. You know, when I was watching Girls, I was like, he just is this guy, right? Like, this, they just found him. But it was a performance. He was playing a character, and he was playing it so well. He makes everything feel very sort of original and organic. And I've never seen him in something where I didn't enjoy his performance.
Absolutely.
Even The Dead Don't Die.
Yeah, he's a new Hollywood guy. He should have been in the 70s. He should be Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah,
he
for should sure. Be, for sure.
He's got that, you know, unpracticed quality to him. And he tries his best in The Report, based on the real life story of the Iraq military abuse scandal, and Annette Bening plays Dianne Feinstein, and John Hamm is in there.
Golden Globe nominee Annette Bening.
Annette Bening, Danny Collins's Annette Bening, right? Is that Danny Collins?
Wasn't she nominated? Oh yeah, she's nominated. Okay,
she's yeah.
I didn't see Danny Collins. I don't write a column on Al Pacino movies.
I'm sorry, Adam. I can't remember off the top of my head. I think that's it. I'm almost positive that's Annette Bening, because whenever I see her, I'm like, oh, there she is. I always imagine her and Al off together. The Report. I texted you guys. Watching The Report is very much like reading a report. Adam Driver is reading you a report, and he's angry that you don't understand all the acronyms. It's a fine. It's the post exploitation. It's doing its best to all the president's men. It is wholly unremarkable. Adam Driver. I don't want to say Adam Driver is miscast, but he is definitely struggling to make meat out of that movie. So you can ignore The Report as well. Congratulations, everyone. I watched The Report, so you don't have to.
You are very committed to watching as much as you can, which I admire.
You told me last year, you're like, Rob, you don't have to watch all of the screeners. I'm like, and I'm like, yes, I do. Like, I have to watch Borg versus McEnroe. Of course I do.
I try to watch as many as I can, but I also have to be kind of discerning about, like, yeah. I'm not going to watch Abominable, you know.
That's a level of self-esteem I just don't have. Hey, Abominable is not bad. Okay?
No, I'm sure
Abominable
it is, but
is pretty good.
If I can get around to it, I will. I have kids,
it's no Missing Link, but it's not bad. But Missing Link is good, everybody. Missing Link.
I missed Missing Link. I feel like the whole animated race this year to make everything into a competition.
Yeah,
is not great.
Frozen 2, How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, Missing Link, Toy Story 4, yeah. Lion King.
Yeah.
See, now let's cut the bullshit. We're putting Lion King in the animated, you know, category. Which of
course
it is. So
I heard a rumor. I think I saw this on Twitter during the 2 minutes that I was on there today, that Disney did not submit Lion King as an animated film. That the people behind the Hollywood Foreign Press made that call themselves, which is an accurate call. It's animated. Of course it is. It's not a live action movie.
Somebody I work with, we were talking about it, a friend of mine, and he was saying photoreal. He was saying we shouldn't call them animated. We should call them photoreal. We'll just call them that because that's what they're going for. That's the distinction between The Lion King and The Lion King. We just say, oh, the photoreal version of The Lion King. I mean, it's more work, but I thought it was like, oh, that's interesting. You know?
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. I'm not down for more work.
No, I watched. So I haven't seen Frozen 2 yet. I missed that screening was like 11 a.m. on a Tuesday afternoon or something like that. I was like, well, I can't do that. I have a job. But I saw How to Train Your Dragon. I have not seen the previous two. I thought that movie was okay. I'm judging by how my 5-year-old reacted to it because we watched that, Missing Link, Abominable, and something else together. One of the other animated screeners I got. And those movies were all okay. But I enjoyed Missing Link quite a bit.
I need to see Missing Link. I feel like out of this grouping, I like How to Train Your Dragon the best. But again, you have 3 sequels, a remake, and Missing Link is the only original property in there.
I enjoyed it. I think it's well worth because I loved Kubo and the Two Strings, and I came late to Kubo and the Two Strings. I can't claim to be like, oh, I discovered that. Like, I was totally like, oh, this is this is a prestige animated movie that you have to see. And then the studio that makes it, I think they're called Laika, I think.
Correct.
Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
I saw that on I saw that on Missing Link. I was like, oh, shit. And it's good. It's got a little hero's journey in there. It's fun. What else? Where do you want to go? Where do you want to go next?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
I've been driving this boat. What do you want to do?
Oh,
hey,
no.
What about... Oh, you know what? Let's talk about stuff that we like. So I have a couple sitting here that...
Yeah.
I did enjoy. So did you see Honey Boy? Did you watch Honey Boy yet?
I did.
Okay, what'd you think? Top 10? No.
Top 10, no.
Okay, go ahead.
I thought Shia LaBeouf was really good. I thought... It gave me a greater understanding of him as a person, and he had a lot of years where he was struggling. And I have not yet seen Peanut Butter Falcon, but I hear he's very good in that.
He is.
You know, it was very easy to make fun of Shia LaBeouf. He was making a lot of bad movies and doing a lot of things in the public eye that were eccentric and or obnoxious and or... troubling, you know. He was having maybe some substance problems. I don't exactly know what was going on with him, but he had his share of troubles, and I feel like Honey Boy helped explain a lot of that and gave me a greater understanding, and I thought, I won't make fun of Shia LaBeouf anymore. Not just because of the performance that he gives, but because of the glimpse into his life that we get.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we think of Ebert, movies are empathy machines. You know, it is definitely one of those things where you can see that he has not a sense of humor about himself, but at least a degree of self-awareness where he can kind of put forth that narrative. And from what I understand, based on a very cursory glance at, you know, Wikipedia or IMDb, that he wrote the screenplay as a therapy exercise. Which to me endears me to the movie a little bit more.
And we see some of that in the movie.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if that was like a narrative, like a, my brain instantly went to The Great Gatsby where they decided to use, Nick Carraway is in therapy and he's writing a novel. shut the fuck up. Get the fuck out of here with that shit. But Honey Boy does it a little bit better. So I enjoyed Honey Boy maybe a little more than you did. I kind of had a couple little reactions to it that I thought were, you know, kind of like, oh shit, there's that. I enjoyed, her name. I'm looking for her name. The young woman who plays the sort of stand-in mother character, who is of course not listed on the back of the screener. Get your shit together, Amazon.
Yeah, right. Come on.
Because Noah Jupe is fine, but I'm looking for the young lady who plays his kind of mother figure. Honey Boy, I enjoyed quite a bit, and it feels like overall the narrative of that one is pretty strong. I it won't be on my top 10 either, but just as a also ran, I thought that's the kind of movie that, you know, if Shia LaBeouf is just going to keep digging in and getting weird, like, that's the right direction to go.
Mm-hmm.
Which Peanut Butter Falcon kind of falls into that as well. He's a very different character in Peanut Butter Falcon. I had a hard time with Peanut Butter Falcon because at a certain point Dakota Johnson shows up and I just can't concentrate anymore.
I have a hard time with Peanut Butter Falcon because it's called Peanut Butter Falcon.
Peanut Butter Falcon.
And I feel like if that movie was called anything else, I would have seen it already.
Yeah. No, it's good. And the lead actor who is Zach Gotz. Jesus Christ, I'm sorry. Zach Gotzigan, who is an actor with Down syndrome, who plays a character with Down syndrome and delivers a really, really great performance. And it's kind of just this little, I think I described it to Adam as like a little like Huck Finn kind of journey, you know, a little Mark Twain journey down a river.
Yeah.
And, it directly invokes that. They talk about Mark Twain at one point, but without spoiling too much of it, he is playing a very different character in that movie. And you know, I wrote about these movies. I don't want to go too much into them, but I enjoy Peanut Butter Falcon. But like I said, it has a Dakota Johnson problem because I just can't focus. I also just real quick, if we're on this line here, Did you see Queen and Slim yet? Did you watch that?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just going to just tell you, I had a little bit less of a reaction to Queen and Slim. Had some awkward problems with it that I don't necessarily feel qualified to talk about.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where I feel like if you're not familiar with Queen and Slim, if you haven't watched it yet, essentially the story of two young African-American man and woman, played by Daniel Kaluuya and Jodie Turner Smith, play Queen and Slim, and they are out on a Tinder date, and they're pulled over. An aggressive police officer gets aggressive. They make a move that proves fatal, and they essentially go on the run. I really liked a lot of what it was doing in order to deconstruct a little bit of what what a young African-American man and what a young African-American woman are expected to be, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. and how they kind of push back against that a little bit. I had real, real problems with the end. I had real problems with the third act. I don't know. How did you feel about it?
I thought it made me excited to see what that filmmaker makes next.
Okay. Yep. That's a good way to put it. It's very well made. I don't have any issues with that. The director is,
I can't remember her name.
Yep. The director is Melina Mastakis. Matsoukas. Yep. Has she made anything you've seen?
I don't believe so.
Lena Waithe wrote it.
Yes.
To me, is incredibly, incredibly interesting. I did not know that until I finished watching it.
Okay. Oh, for crying out loud. Every time I pull up IMDb, it starts playing like Jumanji ads automatically.
So
upsetting.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Come on, you're not excited about Jumanji The Next Level?
Adam and I were talking about that the other day. Like, we both liked the first Jumanji, neither one of us are like even remotely excited. Okay, I'm done with IMDb today because they just keep live streaming some red carpet bullshit or something. I can't be even the slightest bit excited for the new Jumanji movie.
Well, who cares? No, honestly, it is one of those things where it's like it's just fatigue. You're just like,
Yeah. Did you see Bombshell by any chance?
I did not.
Okay.
No. Did you?
Yeah. It's interesting. I wanted to like it more than I did.
Okay.
I think it's this year's Adam McKay movie that Adam McKay didn't make.
I saw the trailer and I was like, Adam McKay didn't make this?
But Jay Roach did, so we still have a comedy director doing it. It's better than something like Vice. The performances are all strong. Margot Robbie is really, really good in a supporting role. Charlize Theron is like weirdly unrecognizable playing what's her name.
Did not. What did they do? When I saw that was Charlize Theron in the credits, I was like, no, it isn't.
Yeah, I don't know because it's clearly her and it's whatever they did is incredibly subtle.
Yeah.
But
effective,
very effective. And she does, she has the vocalization completely down. she gives a really good performance. And if you saw it, did you see that Roger Ailes documentary last year?
I did not watch it, no.
Okay.
That's one of the ones I missed.
It's, if you saw that, you kind of already know everything that's going to take place in Bombshell, or if you followed the news.
I was
going to
say,
ago.
I was alive.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That, so I can't remember.
There are not many revelations, you know, to be found in Bombshell, so it's just sort of a dramatization of events that we already know.
So it's Know the Report is what you're saying.
It's Know the Report. It's missing an Adam Driver character there to explain it all to us. Did you see The Laundromat, by the way, on Netflix? The Steven Soderbergh movie?
No.
It's about the Panama Papers.
Okay.
And it's, again, just characters standing around explaining recent events to us. Literally, like Antonio Banderas and Gary Oldman talk directly to the camera and explain shit to us.
Yeah, that's not. That's the report's problem. It doesn't have any interest in building any kind of narrative outside of just repeating what happened. It's that you know, it's the Wikipedia movie where it's like, am I going to get more from this movie
right.
if I just read the Wikipedia article? Am I going to get anything out of it that I don't get? You know,
anyway, right.
Sorry, no, I didn't watch it yet.
That's why something, you know, we recently rewatched Wolf of Wall Street. I think after we saw The Irishman. And that's so interesting because it doesn't just tell you, here's what happened with Jordan Belfort, but it actually paints a worldview and creates a universe where such a thing is possible.
And then it points it right back at you.
And then points it right back at you.
It tells you, this is your fault,
right.
You know, which is the brilliance of that movie.
You
let
want
this happen.
To sell the pen, right.
Yeah, you laugh at this fucker and you think like, oh, this guy's such a scumbag. And it's like, no, you enabled this guy. Like, that's my favorite part of The Wolf of Wall Street. I love that ending.
That movie's so
That movie is freaking great.
That Scorsese guy, he can direct.
He really knows what he's doing. He if I can speak for all Italians, you know, that guy must be in the blood.
Does he have
Yes.
the most movies we would
the most
call
eyebrows? Yeah.
I'm trying to think of which director has the most movies we would call masterpieces, and again, that's going to differ for everybody, because we could say Wolf of Wall Street is a masterpiece and somebody else will say no, it's not, it's one of the worst movies of the year. But who's in the running, you know? Orson okay. Welles,
yeah,
Alfred
but
Hitchcock?
He's not gonna have yeah. All right, so Hitchcock comes to me first.
But how many does Hitchcock have?
Masterpieces?
Yeah.
I'm going to put the over-under at 10.
You think he has 10 masterpieces?
Fuck.
I don't know.
Let me look at... I'm silently listing...
I'll bet
up.
It's 5.
You think it's 5?
Yeah.
Okay. Vertigo?
Yeah.
Psycho?
Yeah.
Rear Window?
Sure.
Okay. What else you got?
North by Northwest.
North by Northwest would be on there. Would you put the Birds on there? Because
I
wouldn't
put the Birds. I like the Birds.
Dial M.
No.
Dial M. No. Okay. So you think it's closer to 5 than it is to 10?
I do.
Okay.
Spielberg.
Yeah, Spielberg.
Jaws.
Jurassic Park.
Schindler's List. Raiders.
Raiders,
E.T. Close Encounters?
Yeah,
Close Encounters. We both put a question.
We're like, huh? Mashed Potato Mountain? I don't know.
So he's already got more than Hitchcock.
Do you put Saving Private Ryan on that list?
I don't, but I would not argue with somebody
either.
Who does.
Spielberg, okay, so Spielberg has more than...
I did gain new appreciation for Saving Private Ryan after watching that documentary about sound.
Yes. Oh, did you watch that? Did you like that one?
It was interesting, yeah.
The Making Waves one, yeah, I like that one a lot. I put that on that article I wrote. You know what was really funny about that, and this is first world problem again, that was one of the rare screener links that I watched.
Okay.
Because we get lots of emails. I get more emails for, like, you know, smaller movies.
Yeah,
they don't send out
physical copies.
They don't send out discs. And I was like, oh, that one looks cool. Like, I would definitely, you know, like, my little film school brain was like, oh, I would watch that for sure. And then the day after I watched it, I got a physical screener in the mail.
Oh.
I was like, oh, all right. Like, but then I was like, I guess they must have saw that. I don't know. Anyway. No, I would not put Saving Private Ryan on the list either. I know that's going to offend a lot of dads out there. But I would agree that Spielberg has more than Hitchcock.
All right, so Scorsese.
Scorsese is Raging Bull. Okay. Taxi Driver is on there. Goodfellas is on there. Do you put Casino on there as well?
I don't.
Okay. Last Temptation of Christ, do you put on there?
Maybe.
Okay. Do you put Hugo on there? Because I do. Because
I do not put Hugo on there. I object.
Right, I love Hugo.
You can love Hugo.
The Departed, Wolf of Wall Street, Irishman, King of Comedy.
After
Hours is on there.
Mean Streets,
so he's
maybe?
Already got more than anybody else, right?
Yeah.
I
don't know that I put Mean,
you know,
Streets on there, but I'm not arguing with somebody who does. Say what?
What did you say? You cut out for a second.
I said I wouldn't put Mean Streets on there, but I wouldn't argue with somebody who does.
I would agree with that. I wouldn't put I think Mean Streets is a good practice run. So he's already got, you know, for me, I can't go without mentioning David Lynch. But I would have to go ahead and give that over to Scorsese too. I think Lynch probably has four that I think are masterpieces. Everything else is just variations on how much or little you like David Lynch, which for me is a lot.
What are the four? Well, and the interesting thing about David Lynch is he has fewer at bats.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like that's it's kind of like Tarantino, where it's like, well, he doesn't, you know, I mean, because Tarantino's got to be in that discussion too, right?
Yeah.
I would say Mulholland Drive is a masterpiece. I would say that. I think Eraserhead is, even though Eraserhead is not necessarily a movie that I like to revisit that often. I would say Mulholland Drive, Blue Velvet, Eraserhead, and Wild at Heart, I think for me would be four that I would say are truly great.
I'll give you those four, and I'm Ride or Die for Lost Highway. So.
Lost Highway. Yeah, I have to be Lost Highway for sure. So he's got five.
Yeah.
Did we say Spielberg had five or more than five?
Spielberg had at least six.
Okay.
By the way, their heads are exploding.
I know.
We left out Hitchcock movies because we're like, Hitchcock
exactly.
only has four.
Hitchcock,
and people
right?
are like, Strangers on a Train, you fucks.
Yeah, what's wrong with you? Yeah. but again, he had so many at-bats. Like, years ago I wrote about Lifeboat. I love Lifeboat. Lifeboat's probably my favorite Hitchcock film. But I won't put that up there as like, oh, that's one of his masterpieces. That just personally for me is my favorite Hitchcock movie.
Right.
So yes, I know everybody's heads are exploding and I'm not trying to get in it about that. But yeah, is there a better American director, you know, or a better director period, you know, a better somebody who's had for the number of at bats, you know, if we talk batting average here, like a director with a better batting average. I don't know if there's one better than Scorsese.
Stanley Kubrick.
Kubrick. Yeah. But
I would say
also
has a better batting average.
At-bats.
Yes. Because he made so few, but almost every single one he made.
Almost. Yeah.
I'm not a big Clockwork Orange guy.
What's a bad Scorsese movie?
I don't know that he's ever made a movie that's outright bad.
Just less than good.
Gangs of New York is very flawed.
Yes, I agree with that.
Even though I kind of like it.
I have never seen Age of Innocence.
Nor have I.
Okay.
I own it. I have not
yet
watched it.
Putting it on the list.
Okay.
All right, anyway. So we're talking Scorsese here. We're talking... better directors than Scorsese. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know. I think it's the Italian.
I was just wondering that the other day because I was like, I would consider The Irishman a masterpiece. And
wait. Who directed Judy?
Oh, shoot. That would be... Rupert Gould.
Can we talk Judy for a minute? Because you and I were talking Judy off air and Judy...
Yeah, let's talk Judy.
What do you think? We said there is no more look at me movie than Judy.
You know, Renee Zellweger.
Nothing wrong with Renee Zellweger.
She's good.
Yeah.
Oh, there's IMDb again. I made the mistake of pulling up Judy on IMDb, and right away they started live streaming the red carpet.
What's The Rock saying? Is he talking about the beige shirts he wore in Jumanji?
He's talking about the beige shirt he's going to wear in Jungle Cruise.
Is there all right? So all right. Just for a second, Judy, like to me, is one of those movies that's like, yes, like sure. Renee Zellweger is gonna play Judy Garland, and she's gonna play her at a time in her life. And I'm not actively angry when I'm watching Judy. I'm not thinking to myself like, well, this is a bag of shit. Like, I'm thinking to myself, wow, she, you know, she puts it in, and, you know, Renee Zellweger is maybe somebody who was not as valued as she could have been during her heyday. And all right, well, here we go. This is her big, you know, maybe a comeback or whatever. The second Judy's over, I feel nothing.
Oh, yeah.
And the entire thing feels calculated. The entire thing feels like, let's go out there and win a Golden Globe. And it just feels cynical.
Yeah, again, maybe it's coming from the right place. I know her performance seems to be coming from the right place, and there's that very impressive single take where she does the song, and, you know, it does seem engineered to get her some awards recognition. I don't know how much more I learned about Judy Garland. I don't know how much insight I really got into Judy Garland. It's a good performance surrounded by a Lifetime movie.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of where we're at. So good. So you can skip Judy, I think. Would you say skip Judy?
I'm fine skipping it. Yeah.
Okay. So right now, power rankings are The Aeronauts at the top, and then followed closely by Judy, and then maybe The Report is probably under. I think The Report is probably under Judy. I think.
Peanut Butter Falcon.
Peanut Butter Falcon is fine. Leave Peanut Butter Falcon alone.
I'm not even making fun of the movie. I haven't seen the movie. I can't stand that title.
Listen, between Peanut Butter Falcon and Honey Boy, I think Shia LaBeouf is making a delicious sandwich.
One other thing that I did wanted to talk about was, and I didn't have a chance to look at it today. I knew it was coming out, but I haven't had a chance to actually view it. But David Ehrlich did his annual best of list.
Yes, he did.
And you had told me before we started recording that you have this list.
I do. So I watched it. I look forward to the Ehrlich video. I don't ever agree with basically anything. His video last year, I thought was really, I really felt something for that. There was something about, like, I enjoy these videos, and I didn't really start following them until maybe last year or the year before, but I went back and watched the other ones and stuff. And I do feel, you know, even if I disagree with his picks, I have that thing where I'm like, I get overwhelmed by the magic of cinema.
Oh yeah.
Like if for anything else, those videos are wonderful, just like immersive. Like, look how fucking great this is. Like, look how wonderful, you know, look how wonderful this is. And that to me, for a movie lover, is just so incredibly, like, I don't know. Last year when he paired what's the Star Is Born song? I'm Off the Deep End. Shallows. And yep. We paired Shallows with Mission Impossible Fallout. Yeah. Yep. You know, I was just like, that's fucking great. That's wonderful. Total Eclipse of the Heart with Annihilation. Like, it was one of those things where I was like, this is wonderful. This is so great. Anyway, yes, I have his list. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Number 25. He does the top 25. Oh my God, 25. His number. Yeah, I'll go quick. His number 25 was Hustlers. Would that be? Let's do this. Well, no, I can't do that because that would spoil the other show. I was going to say, would it be in your top 10? But I can't do that. How do you feel about Hustlers at 25?
Sure. Okay. I don't know. If I was going 25, maybe Hustlers would make it.
Maybe. Yeah, that sounds right. His number 24 was Us.
Okay.
Yeah, which I agree with. I think a lot of I feel like we're at the point now where it's safe to talk about this. I think Lupita Nyong'o is wonderful. I think Us is a very much a sophomore movie. I think it's very much somebody got a lot of praise for his subtext and decided to make it a little bit too textual.
Yeah,
I think Us is a very good movie. It's no Get Out by a long shot.
Yeah.
Hot take. Number 23 is The Hottest August. Have you seen The Hottest August?
No, I have not.
Documentary about New York City. All right, skipping over that. Number 22 is The Beach Bum,
which I haven't watched yet. I know it's on Hulu, but I haven't watched it.
21 is I Lost My Body.
Okay.
All right. 20 is our boy Terrence Malick with A Hidden Life. Did you watch?
I've got the screener. I haven't watched it.
I got it. I got mine today, and I'm looking at it, and I was like, we joked earlier, like, how come I can give Martin Scorsese 3.5 hours of my time, but when I see 2 hours and 58 minutes or whatever on a Terrence Malick film, I'm like, ah, just come on, like, stop. Like, I get antsy. I'm like, ugh, like, come on.
Because you know Scorsese's going to put something interesting in front of the camera, and Terrence Malick is going to film nature.
Yeah, and Scorsese's not going to make me work for it. Like, he's not going to make me, like... Anyway, Terrence Malick is fine.
I think he has three masterpieces, and then he made some other movies. His first three movies.
Okay.
Badlands, Days of Heaven, and Thin Red Line.
Agreed. Number 19 is Atlantix.
Okay.
Number 18 is Transit.
Haven't seen it.
Number 17 is Diamantio, which I have not seen either. Nope. I've not seen any of these.
A lot of movies I need to see here.
Number 16 is Varda by Agnes, which I think is not a documentary. No, it is a documentary. It's Agnes Varda, I guess. I don't know. I saw clips from it. I think it may be a documentary.
Okay.
Number 15 is High Life.
Interesting. High Life? I have seen it, yeah.
Okay. Number 14 is Midsommar.
Okay.
Higher on my list. Number 13 is Pain and Glory. Now, I've been hearing that Pain and Glory is the big sleeper snubbed, like, everybody should have paid more attention to Pain and Glory. Do you agree with that?
I liked Pain and Glory.
Okay. I heard from a couple people that I respect, like, this is the movie that's going to be ignored that shouldn't have been ignored.
I don't know how I feel about that. I think everybody should just see it and make up their own minds. I think if you're an Almodovar fan, there's a lot to like in Pain and Glory.
Okay. Number 12, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Number 12?
Number 12. This is how I felt when he put Suspiria at like 17 last year.
Oh, no, that was too high.
Yeah. Oh, fuck you. Number 11 is The Irishman.
12 and 11?
Yeah.
Where is this list going from here?
All right, listen, let me ask you this. right now.
Yeah.
What do you think his number one is?
I have no clue.
Given 11 and 12.
The Peanut Butter Falcon?
It is not. Number 10. Number 10 is Knives Out.
Okay.
Number 9 is Her Smell, which I... Have you seen that?
I have.
Okay, what did you think of that? Should I rush to that one?
Should you rush to it? I don't know. I have a weird relationship with Alex Ross Perry. Elizabeth Moss is really, really great. So
that's enough for me.
In order... Yeah, right. And if you want to, you know, see it to nominate her for acting awards, absolutely you should. The movie itself, I, you know, didn't love as much as her performance.
Okay, because next on my list of what I need to watch is either Her Smell or A Hidden Life, and I'm gravitating toward Her Smell. So, number 8 is Synonyms.
I haven't seen it.
Parisian film, I think.
Okay.
Number 7 is Uncut Gems. Now, have you watched Uncut Gems?
I have.
Did you get a screener for that, or did you go see it?
I got a screener for that.
Not gotten that yet. All right. How do you feel about... is Uncut Gems in your top 10?
I don't know. Probably not. But again, that comes down to... what was the movie we were talking about?
The Peanut Butter Falcon.
Climax. Like Climax, it is exactly the movie that it wants to be. It is a very good version of that movie. I tend to not love movies about... out of control people who can't get out of their own way. Like,
you don't like movies about peanut butter falcons.
People who just keep fucking things up for themselves, like gamblers and people who are like self-destructing. They make me too nervous. They make me feel bad and upset. And Uncut Gems is very much that movie.
Everything I heard about Uncut Gems was like, take an Ativan before you see it. Like, you need to...
It's very much that movie. Very well done. Adam Sandler's really good. Like, I think it's a better version of Good Time.
Okay.
Which I was, you know, positive on, but not crazy. I liked Uncut Gems better, But yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay. I missed Good Time. I missed that one last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Uncut Gems. Wait, real quick, do you think that for some reason right now Adam Sandler has got me thinking that, remember when we talked about A Knight's Tale, we talked about Heath Ledger and how he kind of started his career as kind of a movie star and kind of drifted toward character actor a little bit as he went. Can you imagine a world 20 years from now where we remember Adam Sandler as a dramatic actor?
That will be interesting.
If he keeps going.
Yeah,
with
right,
this.
Right. Now he did not get a lot of his, he did not get a Golden Globe nomination, correct?
Not that I saw, no.
Huh. All right.
Okay. Number six is The Souvenir, which I've not seen.
Nope.
Number five is The Farewell. What did you think of The Farewell?
I liked The Farewell.
Okay. I enjoyed that one. I think I reviewed that, right?
You did, yeah.
I enjoyed it quite a bit for what it was. I like, it's a movie that is what it wants to be. Number four is Ad Astra, which I still have not seen. Adam,
nor have I.
Told me was a surprise, a welcome surprise. I like Dad in Space movies. I'm going to go ahead and hashtag First Man. I think we did First Man dirty last year. I really love First Man. That movie spoke to me. To me, I was like, oh, it's this year's First Man. I can't wait. But I still have not seen Ad Astra. But Errol puts it at number four.
Yeah.
His number three is Little Women.
Okay.
Did you see it?
I did.
Okay. Number three, you think?
not for me.
You? Okay. All right. All right. All right. Right now, what do you think his number one is?
I can't even remember what else has come out.
Tell you what, number two is Parasite.
Oh, I forgot Parasite. Yeah.
Okay. And now Parasite is the one that is like, that's one of those placeholders where I'm like, I haven't seen this yet. I'm waiting on my neon screeners, but I feel like everybody I trust is like, no, this will definitely be in your top 10.
Parasite would be very high up on mine.
Okay, good. Number one, Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Okay. Shoot, I need to watch that movie, yeah.
So, there's that. A little bit of anticlimactic because neither of us have seen it.
Yeah, right. I really need to see that, but...
But that is among the neon movies that I'm waiting for, because I do obviously want to see it.
I need to watch it like in the next 48 hours, actually. So,
oh shit, yeah, go for it. You want to just cut this off now? So
is
you
that,
watch
do you
it?
Mind? Is that cool?
Yeah, that's cool. No, go ahead. I'm going to watch Peanut Butter Falcon. I'm going to rewatch The Report.
That's why I like these lists, because that's got a couple movies on it that I haven't seen. Some that I haven't even heard of, and at least one, his number one, that, you know, makes me want to watch it immediately, because I'm like, well, I already knew I needed to see it, and if he's got it at one, I really need to check it out.
Yeah.
I am surprised by how high Little Women is, but maybe that movie just isn't for me as much as it is for everyone else.
I think it's very interesting, given I think it's very interesting that Marriage Story isn't on there. That we have to
not on there.
I expected Marriage Story to very much be a David Ehrlich movie, which is not one way or another. Given the little bit I know of his taste, I'm like, oh, I'm really surprised that didn't even make the top 25. Like, geez. You know. See, this is the problem where I look at Once Upon a Time in Hollywood at 12 and I see The Irishman at 11 and I go, are you doing this on purpose? I don't know. Do you feel that way? Like, not, and this is nothing against him. It's nothing against lists. This is nothing against personal taste and all that stuff. I just go like, come on. Like, do we live on the same planet?
I mean, it's very different from
it's
where
subjective.
I would put them,
it's
but
all subjective,
right? Yeah, it doesn't faze me, you know, as much as like Owen Gleiberman putting it on his worst of list or whatever he did, you know.
Right. I didn't even look at that. What is that, Variety or something? Did
worst of he put the last half hour of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood on his worst. The movie itself was on his best of list. But the last half hour was on his worst of list.
That's just obnoxious.
Yeah.
That's just obnoxious.
But that's how we're going to talk about movies now. Like, oh, that one scene from the movie that I didn't like, I'm going to put that on my worst of list.
Yeah, that's just bullshit. And look, I love Twin Peaks like nobody's business, but Twin Peaks is not a movie, folks. Like, stop it with that.
Tell
shit.
It to Kaye.
Kaye, do cinema. Like, get out of here with that shit. It's a TV show. Fucking serialized narrative. Get out of here. Oh, The Sopranos is the best movie ever made.
Right,
like,
right.
Stop it. Okay. Any other major, like, topics you wanted to hit, or was there anything you got that you were like surprised by, maybe like a screener that came that you didn't even had never even heard of but were pleasantly surprised by, or
no,
something you saw recently?
I liked Waves more than I expected to like Waves, because I haven't loved Trey Edward Schultz's movies. I didn't love It Comes at Night. I liked Krisha a little bit more. And I will be the first to admit that Waves is, like, pretty pretentious. But I also think it's very emotionally affecting and very well made. The editing is pretty impressive, and it has a Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross score, which is always a plus. Performances are good. So I come around on liking the movie once I can kind of get past some of the look at meanness of it all.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. That was another one that I kind of was hearing so much hype about, and then seemed to fall off the radar. The other one that seemed to fall off the radar was Last Black Man in San Francisco. Did you see that one?
I haven't. I haven't watched it yet.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I, in like July or whatever, that was like, oh my God, this will be in everybody's top 10. And then it's sort of, I haven't heard a lot about it. So
yeah.
I still haven't seen it. But that was one of those movies that I kind of set aside, like, okay, when I see this, I should make sure I see this, because right. It's probably going to be on the list. All right. How many weeks until Best Of? When are we doing
it? I don't know. Probably like the last week of December would be my guess.
All right.
So we got some time to catch up on stuff.
Cool. All right, good.
Get to see The Last Jedi. Not The Last Jedi. The Rise of Skywalker.
Shut your mouth about The Last Jedi. It's a masterpiece.
No, I love The Last Jedi. I'm not saying anything bad about The Last Jedi.
You're right, you do. Yeah, well, that's the other thing. Like, that's what made me laugh. Like, I, you know, got, like a lot of us, got a, you know, an invite. I want to be careful because I think Disney will come for the house if I talk about this, but, you know. It was like, okay, I know what day I'm going to see the Last Jedi. No, not The Last Jedi, The Rise of Skywalker. But nobody's even thinking that that might even be on anybody's list, huh? Like, no, nobody, none not. Of the critics groups are like, you know what, JJ, eat a dick. You lost me at Super 8. not me.
No, not me either. I love Super 8. Yeah, like, I don't know.
There's just stuff that's coming out that, like, just, they're just like, nah, just... fuck it.
I think it just exists separately of all this awards talk. You know, it's like Star Wars is its own thing. So
it's not outside the realm of possibility that the last Skywalker or whatever the fuck it's called will be in your list.
It's not. It's not. It could be on my list. I don't. Neither of the other two have been, but they probably could have been.
Yeah, yeah. If I was making a list in 2017, Last Jedi would have been on my list for sure. It would have been near the top.
How's your Star Wars rewatch going?
Fine. Good. You know what? Not even gonna go there. I wish there was a movie between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. I think Return of the Jedi has problems. And I say this as somebody who has the Return of the Jedi memorized and loves every second of it, but when I try to watch it as an adult, I am consistently like, come on, first half hour, do something different. But overall, Star Wars rewatch is going good. I mentioned something the other day about Rogue One. I even wrote, I think, a column for the site about Rogue One. I desperately want Rogue One to be a better movie than it is. I find Rogue One so interesting. It's just a big mess. It's a big hack and slash kind of, you know, I want to see the Snyder Cut. Yeah, I want to see it. I want to see what it was, because there's so much in that movie that I think could be so thematically interesting to Star Wars, and it just kind of is whatever. But I'm going to try to rewatch. I'm trying to get my son interested, so we're going to try to get him to sit down and watch Force Awakens. He's a little young yet, but he's getting into movies. As I said, a lot of the animated screeners I watch with him, try to get him into a couple of those movies, but we fired up the Disney Plus, and I found Bolt from 2008 or whatever, and now Bolt is his favorite movie. He won't
watch anything.
He won't watch anything but Bolt. He loves Bolt.
My daughter refuses to watch Bolt because it makes her cry.
Oh, and you know, we talk about our kids and their taste and stuff. I am a fan of my kids' discerning taste because Bolt is a quality movie. Yeah. Bolt, there's nothing wrong with Bolt. Check out Bolt if you haven't. It's got a killer hero theme. There's a big booming hero theme that comes in, like almost like a Johnny Williams kind of riff, and I enjoy it very much. And there's an earworm kind of pop country song in there that I like very much. And
Jenny Lewis.
It's got Jenny Lewis and it's got John Travolta.
Yeah.
And that's all I need. So check out Bolt. Bolt should be on your top 10, folks.
Well, listen, we started talking about award season and we ended talking about Bolt. So
story of my life.
Our job is done. Well, this was a fun show to do. Thank you for coming on and talking about these movies with me.
No, I'm glad. Thanks. I apologize to anybody who found our lack of structure discerning or disturbing, but it was a good time.
Yeah, we'll be back with another show that maybe has more structure, but I can promise nothing.
I promise nothing. Patrick Bromley, F This Movie.
As always, check us out every day at fthismovie.com. Follow us on Twitter at F This Movie. You can like us on Facebook, and you can rate, review, subscribe in iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to whatever you listen to. And you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again, Rob. This was awesome.
Drive fast, take chances, everybody.
Peanut Butter Falcon.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.